2011 will mark the start of the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, which claimed almost as many lives as were lost in all the other American wars combined. In statuary, those lives have been much commemorated, but less homage has been paid to the freeing of the slaves.
We are all aware of, in any town in the South and many in the North, of Civil War monument statues. Every square has them. We've even got them in New Mexico. But where are the emancipation monuments? Where's the national monument to emancipation, clearly the most single significant outcome of the war? Where are they? Where are they anywhere?
That was Dwight Pitcathy, the former chief historian for the National Park Service, at a recent conference on the Civil War hosted by Norfolk State University. I'm Sarah McConnell, and today on With Good Reason, some highlights from that conference titled Race, Slavery, and the Civil War, The Tough Stuff.
Do you think that make a soldier?
Put together a room full of Civil War scholars and historians, and there will be disagreements. One long-standing debate that divides the House, what caused the Civil War? Dwight T. Pitcathy, a former chief historian for the National Park Service, says the opinion that states' rights was at the center of the conflict is a pervasive one.
I was teaching in Tennessee about 4 years ago, talking to a young man, and it came about that I was teaching at Middle Tennessee State, talking about the Civil War, and he said, well, I hope you're teaching the true history of the war. And I responded that, well, I'm sure I was, but what did he mean? And he said, well, you know, it wasn't about slavery because most Southerners didn't own slaves. It's about states' rights, of course, not slavery. And he and others who are convinced of that have come by that honestly. There's an old tradition, the construction of the lost cause, begun probably by Alexander Stevens and Jefferson Davis in their histories of the war, a little later by Jubal Early, who all made the same point that it was really about states' rights. It was slavery was simply incidental. The idea that it was not about slavery was then carried on by the children of the Confederates in the form of the United Daughters of the Confederacy and the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and you can check those web pages. One of my favorite historians in the past, who was a grand promoter of the lost cause interpretation, was a woman named Mildred Lewis Rutherford. She was had this wonderful title. It was a title I envied, actually, when I was chief historian of the National Park Service. She was historian general of the United Daughters of the Confederacy and took her job very seriously. She published widely. She wrote a number of books having titles like The South Must Have Her Rightful Place in History. That's from 1923. My favorite is The Truths of History, a fair, unbiased, impartial, unprejudiced, and conscientious study of history, I'm not done, object to secure a peaceful settlement of the many perplexing questions now causing contention between the North and the South. That's from 1920. She wrote, all her books were sort of on a couple of themes of portraying a sentimental version of the antebellum South to bolster white supremacy, convictions of her generation, and to present, of course, the true cause of secession. And it set the pattern. Mildred set the pattern for subsequent books on the lost cause by sort of organizing her chapters along statements, such as secession was not rebellion. The North was responsible for the war between the states. The South was more interested in the freedom of the slaves than the North. And the war between the states was not fought to hold slaves. But that continuation of the lost cause, as my bicycling partner in Las Cruces, who's a European guy, wondered, why isn't it lost? But it's not. It's alive and well. And the National Park Service confronted that, certainly not intentionally, about 10 years ago, when in 1998, a number of superintendents and National Park Service employees of the Civil War battlefields, and they decided that in 1998, it was time to start talking about the causes of the war in National Park Service battlefield sites. It had been an unwritten policy since 1933, when the Civil War battlefields were inherited by the National Park Service from the Department of War that the Park Service didn't talk about causes. It was too complex, too contentious, didn't want to rile the public. In Virginia, that played out in a very interesting way. A number of Civil War battlefields were and are in Virginia, and the National Park Service cut a deal with the state of Virginia that it would not produce any interpretive product, pamphlet, exhibit, didn't have slideshows then, without getting the approval of the state historian and of Douglas Southall Freeman. Just to make sure that the Park Service said nothing obnoxious about the South and about slavery, certainly. Well, the results of this meeting in 1998 became public. It wasn't a secret meeting, but as word got out over the next 2 to 3 years, the National Park Service received about 2,200 letters asking us to go in the other direction, to refute the decision of the superintendents, to say it's not so, to go back to not interpreting the causes. I tried to, as chief historian of the National Park Service, I should say, all those 2,200 cards and letters came on my desk, ended up at one point, and we answered them. We had, I thought, well, this is easy. I'd read Battle Cry of Freedom. I'll just quote Jim McPherson. Well, it turns out that in spite of his Pulitzer Prize, Jim is just a Yankee historian. And he really doesn't know much about Southern history. I apologize for that, Jim, but that was the answer we got. We had a little better luck. I tried to use some Southern historians, and it turns out they were scalawag historians, so that didn't get me anywhere either. We learned a lot of lessons from this. One of them is that the more you can base your arguments or your presentations on original sources, the better you're off you're going to be. This is advice Jim Horton gave me years ago. And we found essentially neutral ground by talking about using the words of the secessionists themselves. As you probably know, four states developed declarations of secession. These are formal statements by the secessionist, letting the people of that state and other states know exactly why they left. South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, and Texas all developed these. Mississippi's begins, "Our cause is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery, the greatest material interest in the world." And the rest of the paragraph goes on to explain why a threat to slavery is a threat to Southern commerce and a threat to Southern civilization. What I know now that I didn't know 10 years ago, that there is a vast and deep collection of primary sources. So those are the state secession journals. 11 states called secession conventions. Every one of them kept meticulous records. They elected delegates. They elected officers. They kept a record of the votes, of proposals, one thing and another. And with the exception of Texas, every state published them within 1861 or 1862. From Alabama, you find G.T. Yelverton saying, "The question of slavery is the rock upon which the old government split. It is the cause of secession." John T. Morgan from Alabama said, "The ordinance of secession rests in great measure upon our assertion of the right to enslave the African race, or what amounts to the same thing, to hold them in slavery." Virginia deliberated the longest of any state, produced the longest record, 4 volumes, almost 3,000 pages. Thomas Good, who I think represented Mecklenburg County, said, "The great question which is," and these are typical quotes, you find them throughout these documents, "the great question which is now uprooting this government to its foundation, the great question which underlies all our deliberations here, is the question of African slavery." And I hope that, in concluding my remarks, that over time, these state secession conventions get reprinted for the sesquicentennial and become part of the conversation we have in gatherings such as this over the next 4 years. Thank you.
Dwight T. Pitcathy is a professor of history at New Mexico University and a former chief historian for the National Park Service.